Hey everybody, it is time. It is time to hop on a plane, a train, a boat, a goat, a bike, a car, and find your way upstate New York to a little town outside of Phoenicia. I don't know what the town's called actually, but the place that we're going to be in is called Menla, and it is a gorgeous, epic retreat center in the middle of the forest in the Catskill Mountains with a spa and organic vegetarian food with lots of beans and yoga in the morning and a swimming pool and a swimming hole and trails. And yes, it is an HLN retreat. It is a 5-day retreat from Wednesday, June 12th to Sunday, June 16th. It is the biggest retreat we've ever put on, and the entire team is going to be there. They are all flying from different corners of the country to come together to hold you in the healing magic that is Somatics. We will be teaching you how to belong without having to fit in, how to find safety inside of yourself and share that with others, how to receive witnessing, how to feel for your boundaries instead of fawning. We are going to cover so much, and you're going to be doing it in the most ideal setting of being fed, of being loved, of resting, of enjoying the forest and nature, and being with us and 60 other bodies. So please go to the website, holisticlifenavigation.com, and click on events, and you'll find it there. Wednesday, June 12th to Sunday, June 16th. All the info as well can be found directly through the link in this episode details. I am just so thrilled for this, and I can't wait to see some of you in person. On today's episode, I speak with my dear friend, Fredo Viola, about somatically healing through songwriting.
Music is great because it dissolves all of the boundaries between the people who are listening and playing. So it's a beautiful utopia, music, and that's why it's so healing.
Welcome to the Holistic Life Navigation Podcast. I'm your host, Luis Mojica. I was sick and depressed until I discovered that I could make music, and then my whole life transformed because I began learning how to listen more deeply. Listen to life, people around me, and to my body. And that's when I realized that the body speaks through sensations, and learning this new language meant relearning my body and mind. I soon healed myself of many chronic conditions and then began teaching others how to do so as well. Holistic Life Navigation combines nutrition, self-inquiry, and somatic experiencing to help you release stress and trauma just by listening to your own body. This podcast serves as a place to share my experiences, as well as the experiences of many others who have healed and are healing through unique, unorthodox, and unusual ways. Your time to learn begins now. I'm welcoming my friend Fredo Viola onto the show today because his new record comes out on April 9th. And I wanted to use this as an opportunity to promote his new record, as well as explain and share the process of processing and healing unconscious, unresolved trauma and events and situations through music, through songwriting. Music is so somatic. You know, we say we hear it and listen to it, but music's something we feel. It's a vibration. I always love the image of Beethoven sawing off the legs of his piano as he was going deaf and playing, composing just based on the vibrations moving through the floorboards of different notes. And his body was able to decipher those and he could write his final pieces as he was, you know, deaf and dying. And I find it so beautiful to me that there's these 12 notes, and these notes are different vibrations that we hear them as notes. They exist in the universe. They exist on Earth. They exist when a rock falls off a mountain and hits a rock. They exist when a tree snaps in half. They exist when water flows through a river, when rain drops into a puddle. They exist and are sung through the throats of frogs and birds and insects. And I love that every species on this planet speaks and communicates through vibration and song, and how it's the ultimate unifier and communicator and connector before language. Language is like cutting little bits of vibration and organizing it with certain syllables and sounds. And I think of even the word love, and you just think, love. Try it with me. Like, take a breath and get really, really still. And as slow as you can say it, say the word love. Love. And feel the tongue hitting the roof of the mouth or the teeth as you go into the L, L, and the in the throat. There's like a tension to cut that there. Of. Then the lips have to come together. So much happens from the stomach to the mouth and tongue with one word. So when we remove the word and we just let the sound come through, we get to move parts of our bodies that don't have context. And I find music and song and chanting and vocalizing to be an amazing way to access preverbal, prenatal, intergenerational, and ancestral traumas, as well as awaken those wisdoms of ancestors and people who've come before us. It's very natural, and the body understands vibration really well. I remember when I lived in Brooklyn, I was walking home, and there was a sewer truck pumping sewage out of a gutter on Manhattan Avenue in Greenpoint. And it was this deep hum. I remember it was going boom, 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 boom. And it had this incredible motor and rhythm. And I was singing with it and to it. And I could be in relation to a machine, just as I would be to a bird singing. And that's the non-duality of vibration. It binds us all. So I hope you enjoy this conversation, and I hope you enjoy Fredo's beautiful music from his upcoming record, My New Head. Kalos, welcome to the show, my friend, Fredo Viola.
Hello, Luis Mojica. How are you?
Good. Good to see you in this capacity.
Yeah, same here.
I think, you know, the first thing I want to ask you, let's actually start with the new record.
Okay.
I want to know what, before we go into music writing and how it is for you, like what led up to the record? What's the theme? How has this record helped you process things?
That's a tricky one. I mean, I had a kind of, my transition into the industry of music was a kind of tricky one and led to very, very complex and kind of pretty heavy emotions. And then also I had about a very, very bad bout of Lyme disease, which sort of like was an asteroid that hit my whole life. And so I went through a period where I was really, really processing a lot of anger, and it felt kind of like very trapped within me. So this album really was sort of kind of connecting to those trapped emotions, moving them around, flowing them a little bit, and finding my way forward. It's called My New Head for, you know, specifically for that reason. Sort of grew a new some green. There was some growth out of the creation of this album.
Tender shoots coming through.
Exactly.
We can talk about any of the songs and any of the stories, but there's three that we're going to feature in this episode. And the first one, you know, I'm curious about is Waiting for Seth, especially because when I think about it's all in the songs that we sing I think about perception. I'm not sure if that was your meaning, but I'm curious what that song means to you or what that helped you process.
Well, it's sort of a kind of a something that I'm very proud of this, but it's not necessarily something you want to say about the song, but Waiting for Seth rhymes with Waiting for Death, which very much was what I was, that's the position I was stuck in for a while. And that was, I was sort of, it was like a grudge that I was holding. And I started to do something called bee venom therapy, which actually started to release the physical, trapped energy in my body. And I just realized that, if death comes, what song am I going to be singing? Am I going to be, holding this bitter, blanket, this disgusting thing next to my body? Or am I going to be, dancing and feeling more free? And the song is very, very jolly. It's very upbeat, but the lyrics are pretty intense, because it came out of that period of me just starting to feel like I was beginning to heal. I was sort of pushing myself towards healing. Mm-hmm. Like, here you go. Here's a little shove. You can do it.
Waiting for Seth, who's coming for me. I once called him the devil, but now I can see that it's all in the songs that we sing when he comes. It's all the songs that we sing. You may not like this, but the world won't stop for anybody's please. Can't keep control, the more you hold, it slips away just like a dream. Take the road that makes a right, I'll make a left, and then in time we'll see. How many turns can fill a life? How many avenues from normalcy? And in the shadow there's a light, just bright enough that I can see.
What did you learn about as much as you can conceive of death from writing that song and performing it?
It's funny. I've been thinking about the theme of this show, and I do feel that it's kind of hard for me to think about healing with any kind of rational thought. I don't really heal that way. The lyrics, putting these lyrics into the song was like a way of connecting to these kinds of ideas in a halfway, because mm-hmm. the music was still flowing underneath. Mm-hmm. But I don't really know. I can't really answer that question specifically, and nor do I really kind of, I don't really even feel comfortable attempting to answer that, because I like to feel a little bit looser about the music.
So but, tell us about that then. Like, tell us about that experience for you. Like when you said the words the words connect you to it.
Yeah.
But there's this music flowing underneath. What, let's separate the worlds then of the mind and the music. What's right. the music like for you? Is it of the mind? Is it of the body? Like, what's music like in that case?
Well, it's funny. I mean, to talk about another song from the album, Sunset Road, which was really the one that was attached to major anger, major bitterness. I had a lyric stuck in my head for years. And it's the big lyric, which has an F-bomb in it, and really is that sort of like, you know, it's that little object of anger. And for me, lyrics come very, very, very slowly. But I use the music to sort of start down that road. And it's different than the sort of intellectual thing, because there is a flow to music. There's there's an energy to it. And it's sort of like doing yoga, you know, when you focus on a muscle and you stretch it this way, and you stretch it that way. And before long, your muscle feels like it's warm and glowing. Mm. It's kind of the same thing with these ideas. Sunset Road was a meditation about anger, extreme anger. And I followed that along. And what came to me from that song lyrically was a warning that I was heading towards a very dark night. And I had a package of just anger and you know, evil thoughts with me.
An elegy, a the song of loss, tortures and pleas.
I guess I'm curious to bring us more into it sensationally. Like, if we were in your body, what's the experience like for you? Do you hear the music first? Do you feel it first? Like, how does the music come to you? Not the words, but the actual instruments and compositions.
Usually it is just a melody. Usually it's a melody. And then I'll take long hikes and just see where, play with the melody, and I'll try it in the minor key. I'll try it in the major key if it was starting out in the minor key. I'll sort of take leaps where I'll just see if I can jump it into a different place that feels, the whole time you just have to see how it makes you feel, you know? And, it's like walking down that road and you see where the road takes you. That song was really just constructed with voice and piano. But for me, harmonies are really important. And, the harmonies are where you bring in some of the kind of more complex, more ambiguous, shards of emotional, sensation. Does that make sense?
100%. I often find, really constricted even just with composing instruments. But once the harmonies come in, it feels like the humanity has entered the room.
Absolutely.
It feels like it's so easy to access through the voice, I find, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. But in this case, so I wrote a piece for a wonderful violist friend of mine, did a great job with it, really great. But I had an upright bassist, and when he brought in he's a very, very, very deep jazz composer, and he brought a harmony to it that just, it was really interesting because I didn't really write what he brought into this recording, but somehow it shaped my experience of the song. You know, it was really pretty cool.
You know, when you say that, it makes me think of when we're talking about using songwriting to heal trauma or to process feelings or even process experiences that get locked up in the mind or body. When we bring in other musicians, and particularly in that example where this bassist brought a completely different flavor or sensation or texture or emotion or character, you know, however it came through for you, does that mean in your experience, does that mean there's this unspoken connection to the experience that's human that everyone experiences and that's how he brought it? Like, how do you interpret that community?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think
it's like a relational piece, right?
It's a very relational piece for sure. And I think music is a very mysterious practice. And, you know, music is great because it dissolves all of the boundaries between the people who are listening and playing. So it's a beautiful utopia, music. And that's why it's so healing. That's why even a bitter minor key song can be extremely healing, because it's not rigid. It's not like putting on a tight jacket. It's taking things off, flowing, vibrating with other musicians or even just on your own, you know?
Well, I'm glad you used the word vibrating, because I think that's when you say magic and the mystery, you know, like we have this concept of Big Bang and just explosions being kind of the beginning of life as we know it. And music is just like a reverberation of that. Mm. It's these 12 notes, and notes are just a word for the way it vibrates. And I think it's so beautiful that we say things like, I listen or I hear music, but I still think we feel it more than anything.
Oh, yes. Right? Absolutely. If you don't feel it, then it's, I mean, look, not to be judgmental, but I think music really should be felt. Otherwise, it stays a little bit in the realm of fashion. You know, mm-hmm, it's not, mm-hmm. It's not fashion, but it's like an emblem that you're wearing rather than mm-hmm. Something that's making a transformation. Mm-hmm. The song that really transformed for me, the sort of beginning of my using music specifically to sort of heal was the sad song, which I wrote after my father died. Mm-hmm. My dad died of cancer. It was a really, really scary death for him. It wasn't a very pleasing experience I mean, not, of course, nobody dies. When somebody dies, it's never satisfying, but you do sort of want some sense of wholesome something, and it wasn't wholesome. And so I felt like all of my emotions were so frozen. I couldn't feel anything. And it was mm-hmm. crazy. I was like, my father just died. Why am I not sobbing? Mm-hmm. And I had written a little tiny song, half written, just some, you know, basically sketched. A piece of music after I found out that a dog from a previous beautiful relationship of mine had cancer. The dog way outlived my father, by the way, unfortunately. I mean, not unfortunately, you know what I'm saying, mm-hmm. Ironically. But so I went and I found that song and I started to try and, you know, improvise it and I started adding harmonies, and it was like those flotation devices that they put on heavy things at the bottom of the ocean. All of my emotions started mm-hmm. to come up from within me, and I was sobbing and recording, mm-hmm. sobbing and recording. And ultimately, it's one of the most joyous songs I've ever written.
That example of that song is really beautiful for several reasons. One, you just beautifully explained the somatic experience of songwriting. Mm. Like that a melody can drives you into an emotional depth in your body that you didn't know how to access. It's like the way people use ayahuasca and mushrooms. It's like a melody can do that. So it brings you to this sensational experience. And there aren't lyrics. There's lyrics at that very end. There's that one tiny moment. Yeah. But so this song went viral because there's a felt experience that people are connecting to.
Yeah.
And I find that to be important. What was your feedback from people who were connecting to it? I mean, were they all connecting to the grief, or did everyone interpret it differently? Or like, what was that like?
Well, mostly nobody was connecting to the grief, actually. Although people would cry, but everyone came away from that feeling like that it was joyful, mm-hmm. And ultimately joyful, or it was a significant movement of emotions, you know. Which, what is that? Is it joy? Is it sadness? What is
naming it?
It
is just so unnecessary, right?
Totally.
Like joy, yeah, sadness. Who cares? It's like an amazing feeling. Is all we know.
Absolutely, and it's strange. I mean, I think that's what music is the best for. I've been lately very obsessed with reaction videos, and every single time I watch, I sob like a baby because I've been yearning for this connection to the music. There's nothing like watching somebody, and you're connecting too because you're listening.
That's right.
And you know, seeing the emotions being stirred. That there was a woman listening to a Pink Floyd song. And you could see that it starts off, what's that song from The Wall? Hello, hello, is there any?
You're asking the wrong person.
Whatever.
I live under a cultural rock, you know this?
I can't remember. It's like one of the most famous songs. But there's this one change that it just suddenly goes into the major key, but with these these descending da 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 da, which I find very, very there's something happy and sad about it. And you see this complex thing go over on her face. First she's like, ah, and then all of a sudden she's like, oh, and then her lips start trembling. And it's just beautiful. It's like getting caught in the rain.
I completely relate to that. I don't watch a lot of reaction videos. I got in the habit after you told me about them. I watched, I specifically watched Nina Simone reaction videos and found those really, really breathtaking. But the one that always gets me is it's a performance by a woman named Betty LeVette of a song by The Who. I don't even listen to The Who, but it's this song, Rain, Love Rain on Me, I believe it's called. And her name's Betty LeVette, and it's the Kennedy Center Honors. So it's these people come out and they honor legendary people. And she does their song in this way that is just so, it just transcends the original piece. And you can feel through your body as she's singing and through her gestures, you can just feel being overwhelmed by so much emotion. And they go to The Who, who's in the audience, they're old, it's recent, they're watching her and the tears are just streaming down. And I bawl hysterically every time.
Yeah, I'm almost going to cry right now. Even just imagining it, seriously.
There's times I will use that video like medicine. Like if I have a bunch of clients and I'm not crying with them, but I want the cry is there, I'll watch it and it was And so it brings me to the what I guess made me ask the question originally, the music versus the words. I don't know about you, but when I'm composing, I almost find something sacrilegious at first with lyrics. Like when they come in, I have this love-hate with them.
Absolutely. So, well, you write great words, though. It's kind of crazy.
You. Well, but I wonder for you, how do you justify that? Like, why don't you just make it instrumental? What makes you want to add language and duality and story?
It's strange. I don't know why. Like when my first album had a lot of gibberish and I really, really resisted. Mm. You know, for me, the resistance to words is because I have a kind of weird relationship with my identity. I don't like to be identified particularly. In fact, when I was a kid, I would always draw pictures of faces and I'd never put the pupils in because I liked them staying very kind of like mythical. But I feel like it was a purposeful thing putting focus on lyrics this time around. And in fact, many of the songs are absolute lyrics focused songs because I had a lot of stuff to process. And, you know, there is nothing like processing these thoughts and ideas with music for me. There's another song, In My Mouth, which is really, really disturbing. That one is about shame. And I had like a little portion with lyrics that I listened to in my head over and over and over again. When I followed that along, it took me to the section where I suddenly, from what I wrote with the voices and piano, I could see this vent right on the other side of the Metropolitan Museum in autumn time that blows wind. It's like a wind vent that I used to go to when I was a child. And just this sense of innocence that just melted me in the very center of this very angular, thorn-filled song. And, you know, it was, it allowed me, and these lyrics are very, very honest, so honest that I actually, before I recorded the song, I felt really humiliated. I thought, I can't do this. I can't sing this. But putting it all together and singing it absolutely freed me, freed me from the sense of shame. And I feel like I processed it more into my body in a way that was, again, it's not like storing it in your body. It's the energy then flows again.
Yeah,
flows.
Integration is what I always call it.
Yes.
But I think flow is a great way to speak to it because that's exactly my experience. That's what justifies lyrics for me as well. It's like the music. I see the music as nature, you know, like wind, like sun, like temperature, rain, storms, hurricanes, all those things where there's not really a name for it. It's just something felt. And then the lyrics are the identity that I see it as. It's almost like we're burying our identity. It's like you're sacrificing it to this nature of the music. Yeah. So you can integrate it and be witnessed by the music itself.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to ask you about, those different roles as a modern artist, where you're alone, writing, living with it in your mind for years before it's recorded sometimes, recording it for years, if it's you, engineering it for years, like mm-hmm. so much work and time for one. How many versions of Waiting for Seth were there?
161.
Woo! And I get tired after three versions when I do a demo. So what amazes me about that is, as you're going through each layer, and for anyone who's listening who doesn't make their own music, what we're talking about is you hear the melody in your mind, you literally sketch it out if you write music, or you play it on a piano, or you sing it into a microphone, then you add all these different instruments and you mix them and get the balances the way you want, and you get the other compositions in, the other arrangements and other instruments, then you do your background vocal. There's so many layers to make a song. And Fredo spent how many versions again? 168?
161
different versions of one song before he decided it was ready for this record. So when you're being witnessed by the music that many times, and it's interesting, it's like maybe you're hearing it all this time because you have to witness the lyrics so many, like you have to hear them, so feel it so many times. What's that process like for you in terms of the healing and processing piece?
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, at that point, the healing, whatever you're going to get out of it, you've gotten out of it. Now you're just,
you're either
undoing some bit of crap that you put into it or it's honestly, it's the reason why it took so long. And it does actually for a lot of these songs, is just, you want to start to strip away the stuff that you've put on out of ego or out of anxiety or vanity. And so, I had harpsichord and a bunch of things. And, my second album was filled with songs like that, that felt, I mean, I love my second album. I'm very proud of it, but in comparison, it feels very constricted and that doesn't have the freedom that this one does. And it was just about, like being really bold and just removing the harpsichord entirely and, just going with bass and voice for the first, 30 seconds of the song.
I have to understand Fredo's a Virgo like me. So when he says really bold, removing the harpsichord, there's that means very different things for different people. Some people want to see that as bold, but for us, it's very bold.
Yes.
Well, so then it helps me refocus my question. In those different stages of, as I understand it myself and with you, you feel the song, the melody, let's mm-hmm, say, mm-hmm, then it comes mm-hmm. through in your mind, or you sang it, played on something. Then the melody becomes this kind of like intoxication, doesn't it? It's like a drug. It like lives
absolutely.
In you, almost haunts you sometimes, like just won't leave you alone, right? Until you follow it.
And the harmonies too. The harmonies are really the haunting part.
I get that. And I remember watching a Philip Glass documentary, and he said he never makes music, he listens for it. And so it's like a note comes in and he listens for the next one. It's just like a following.
Yes, yes.
And so I love that idea of being haunted by the pieces, because they have spirits. They come from somewhere. They're living entities as far as I'm concerned. And we're just like essentially in service to them, aren't we?
Yes, absolutely.
So when you're in that process of being in service to them, and then they're actually forming this, what we call the song, mm-hmm. and then the words and the context and the story and the memory comes in. And this might be a really trite question, but at what point does it feel like I processed it? Like, do you have to then do it live? Do you have to hear what other people think about it? Like, where do you feel like you've processed that piece personally?
That's a really good question. And in fact, every single song on every album has one place in the process where I sob like a baby and I just get extremely moved. And if that part doesn't come, that point doesn't come, I don't put it on the album. I really don't. I don't feel like it's done. Even small songs, ridiculous songs. Mm-hmm. There's a ridiculous song on the album called Kick the Sick, which is just carnival. But even that song, there's a middle section. And, it's like, it's so strange. It's like, because it's not just melodic you know, being moved by a melody. It's really being moved by a very mysterious sort of alchemy of sound and harmony and texture.
It literally moves you, like the words move, it moves something in you, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So for me, that's my goal with every song, is to get to that point where which I suppose makes the album a little heavy for the listener, because there's no filler. There's no filler. But
it's authentic.
It's authentic and it's short.
Hmm. Well, I'm loving this conversation because it's it kind of, you know, we're not speaking to the phenomenon of sound healing. It's become such a market. We're not really talking about that, but that's what we're really talking about, essentially.
Yeah.
It's like these vibrations that find their way to us somehow. That's the mystery. Like, how, where do they come from? They find their way to us. We listen, we follow them. And then they move something in us and essentially bring something to the surface that we might not have even known was there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? And I wonder right now, because you're in the phase of the album's done, it's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Everyone listening should go to your website and buy it, or at least stream and decide if they want to buy it, but it's really good. Do you feel like right now, what's it like in your body between the place of, I spend years processing a big thing. This is like a decade of your life you processed in this record, if not your whole life in many different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's it like to have it done, like the seal is on it? And you're in between the place of like, it's my little secret and people are soon going to hear. What's that like for you?
Boy, that's a tricky question. It's because it's mixed. It's mixed.
Yeah.
I mean, I still have a deep relationship with the album, and I mean, you know, are you the same? I listen to my music. Do you listen to your music?
Yeah, you know,
I certainly do.
I listen to it until I'm over it.
Right.
Like when we're talking about processing, once it brings up all the stuff I needed to hear, it's almost like I forget I even wrote it.
That's interesting. Well, I listen to it. I mean, obviously when you're finished with an album, then there's still work to do. You want to get it into people's eyes and ears. And so I'm working on videos and things like that.
But that's
so
a whole how does that, I'm curious. To me, that's a whole other layer. It's like there's this layer of, this is just for me, like the many years of hearing it, writing it, the lyrics, the crying, the processing, then other musicians hearing it, people mixing it, all these like tender moments of people essentially reading journal entries and hearing you use your voice in a vulnerable way. That whole process processes so much. But then what does it mean for you now to then have to put it in the world? Like, where does that interrupt? And or where does it continue the process?
Well, you know, I mean, it's a difficult thing. I honestly, I've got a lot of conflict with that part of the process. Mm-hmm. It's lovely when people are reacting to the music, though. That is truly lovely. That's the goal. When I think videos are really important, or maybe I don't think it's past tense. I think videos are a really important thing. I think anything that's going to give the listener some sense of stability, music is not stable. Music is ambiguous as hell. You can't see it. You can't point, you don't know where it is. It's around you, you know? And so having a video or a movie or something like that gives the person a place, some perspective, some place that you can sit in this chair, you know, they're given some stability. Mm-hmm. And so it's like they let their guard down and that music comes in and moves them more freely. So I think that's what I'm focusing on now.
So it's really about, of course, crafting a way to help people connect to it. That's the place right now.
Yes. Yes. And of course being open to reactions, which hopefully I'll get some reactions, because it really does. It's like that. That's all I do it for.
What?
I just want to move people. I want people to feel something the way that I felt it, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. You know, thinking of, I guess I'm thinking of the closing song,
My Secret Power. Power.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the most upbeat song arguably on the album, I would say. It's the most like, I don't even want to call it easy to digest. I don't want to call it any of those things, even though right. I just did. I don't want to go into that. I don't want to go into that because everyone might experience it differently. But right. it has a complete different emotional texture to for me than mm-hmm. all the other songs.
Definitely.
And I'm curious what that piece is about, what that means to you.
Well, I mean, in some ways, it's taking the process of dealing with pain. Mm-hmm. But it's a different view. It's the pain that goes on in a relationship. And in fact, in all of the really important relationships in my life, there's always sort of like these moments where there's no understanding between the two people. And there's just like, you know, butting heads. Mm-hmm. And that's very painful. I find it very, very painful. And there's a little middle section to the song, which leads up to the climax, that goes between major and minor in this way. And I felt the material was so strong and symbolically strong for me that I actually took that little portion and created a version for piano to begin the piece. Mm. And in fact, took the whole album begins with the same material played on a kind of Glockenspiel in a kind of toy box situation. And for me, the climax of that little sequence is the climax of the whole album. And it's the place where you're just free. You just feel ecstatic. Mm. That song, it's an important one, you know, for the flow of the album, because it's a weird album and it's got a lot of conflict on it.
The feathers and the paint, remove the ornaments and oddities. And are we calling this a break? I have endured your absence silently. Is it true? Searching the sky, it enters honestly. And now my heart is flipped in two, sweet leaking water running out of me. Peace.
I think of trauma so differently than most therapists. You know, to me, it's very beautiful. Mm. And sometimes people hear that and they're like, how can, you know, rape and suffering and pain be? Those aren't the traumas. Those are the misguided, you know, violent actions. The traumas are like what the body does. Mm. And the reason why I find it beautiful is because I see it as life force, and I see it as this like mysterious thing greater than us that moves our bodies away from threatening situations. Mm. And like when we're traumatized, that life force gets stuck, and then we're repeating those situations unconsciously and triggered by things. And that's where we learn to heal it and work with it. Mm. But when you're in touch with that original life force, which gets stuck, which we call traumatized, I'm saying it's beautiful because art, oh my gosh, how much art do we have that's a response to trauma?
Absolutely.
That's, you know, a response to, I think of like Frida Kahlo, like suffering in her bed and the gorgeous like visions.
Suffering.
So there's something like very, there's something very initiative about suffering. Like there's an initiation that happens when you suffer, because suffer is really like ego death that you're resisting. And so you're resisting death, and finally you give into it, and then you live to talk about it. It's kind of magical,
exactly.
Right?
It is very, very magical. Yeah.
And that's really more than any other record or songs I've ever heard you make. I see this one that got the most of like someone that survived many different deaths of many different kinds.
Right.
And so I guess I'm just saying that because I wonder how you experience, because these are your songs about your life, about your experiences, when you listen to them, do you hold them like, oh, the beauty from this trauma? Like, how do you see it? How do you experience the results?
Well, I mean, at this point, once I get past that point where I'm sobbing and I know that the song is finished, I don't feel it quite as deeply from that point forward. It's like what you were saying before, you sort of let it go after you've processed it. But I definitely identify with your idea about the beauty in suffering. It's one of the things that I've never quite understood, and it's probably my misunderstanding about Buddhism and the idea of you know, letting go of these kinds of conflicts. And it truly is my misunderstanding, because I haven't studied it properly. But I'm always like, but I like the minor key, but the minor key leads to the major key. And it's such a good feeling when you go from the minor to the major, you know, and I like those notes that are clashing because when there's a really beautiful piece by, by Mahler, where he just touches, he's got like there's a big note going, and then he just, da, da, da. So the da is playing all the time. And then he just touches a da, da, which is one step above. So it is not, that's not a good feeling, but it's like this little tiny tension, and that's life, you know, that's the shape.
But when you say that and you talk about Buddhism, to me, that's Buddhism explained in music. It's like to dance within the tension, because I don't experience Buddhism or the work I do or meditation to be about like, don't have any tension.
Right.
I see it more like what you just said. Tension is part of, like, you have to die to live. You know, for all of us to be speaking right now, someone had to die before us. So the tension is natural. It's part of nature. Mm-hmm. But our resistance is what's unnatural.
Yes.
And so it's like the practice of not resisting the tension, but actually merging with it.
Yes.
I think it's what we love about music, right?
Absolutely.
It gives you that. You can merge with tension.
It frees you from context. Like context is the thing that's so tight, you know? And I just got finished saying that, you know, a video will give people context. But again, it starts them with context and then it throws them off, you know?
Well, but you're right. A video gives someone context for people who need context. You know, someone might hear a song and think, I love being, you know, I love making my own story up. And someone else might say, like, that's scary. I need the context. They're not going to say that, but that's what we're feeling. The video gives us some safety of like, oh, there's a human, there's a mouth, there's an eye. You know, I can understand that, which I find really beautiful.
Yeah, I do too.
Well, I think this is a gorgeous conversation. I thank you.
Thank you.
Do you want to say anything about when your album comes out? Anything people should look for?
Oh, Lord. April 9th.
Go ahead.
April 9th, and you can find it on Bandcamp, on fredoviola.bandcamp.com. And that's it.
And what's your website?
It's being sold on record too. And actually, it's very, very much was geared towards the experience of putting the needle down and listening. Mm. We put a lot of work into crafting a really, really well, mastered, beautiful vinyl. And my website is mynewhead.com.
Beautiful. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Luis.
Again, Fredo's information is mynewhead.com. Or you can find him at Fredo Viola via Bandcamp, as well as on Instagram and Facebook. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. My question for you is, where do you feel the episode? Take a breath and just notice. What's your body doing right now? Sit with it. Let it speak to you. And let whatever comes up, come up. And your only job is to listen. For all the wisdom you need is right inside of you. For more information on my work, including my online courses and healing circles, please visit holisticlifenavigation.com. You can also follow me on Instagram and Facebook, where I share weekly philosophies and resources to help you release stress and trauma from your body so that you can live a happier life. Thank you so much for joining me. I'll see you next time.